It's no BS, and it's here in London.
It's only Wednesday, and it's been already. We're tired.
Yeah, we've been at the Gartner Data and Analytics Conference in London, UK. It is the end of the conference, day three, and we actually are going to get together with a bunch of other fair and celebrate on Friday, because this is a very special week.
Yes, it is 4 years.
Four years
of doing this podcast. That remember that thing that started 4 years ago, a little bit over 4 years ago, a little thing called COVID. That was the whole start of it. So
I can't believe it's been 4 years. It was over 4 years ago, right? And a pandemic was happening. And we're like, man, what are we going to do to connect with people and data and talk with you? We're not going to conferences anymore.
That's how it all
started. It all started with Zoom, right? And just hanging out with some friends. And we were like, let's call it catalog and cocktails. We'll drink and talk about data.
So I'm just looking here. The first episode was May 13th, which was this past Monday, exactly 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we did 32 episodes, actually, mm-hmm. just the two of us talking. I think we had a couple of guests. Originally.
We had a couple of guests. I was DJ Patil one time.
And then we also had,
but it was mostly just us talking.
It was just us talking like that. Then was our first official guest? And then it just started from there. We've had now a total of 100 with this episode right now. I think it's 182. Some takeaway up. We didn't have guests and there's some ranting episodes and stuff like that.
But so, roughly speaking, 182 episodes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah.
So what is really didn't spend time doing the takeaways. So off the top of your head, what are the things that have just marked you in the last 4 years of conversations we've had on the podcast?
So I think some of the biggest things that have struck me 4 years, right? The last 4 years, the rise, fall of the data mesh. We had Jamak Dagani on and talked to a few different folks about data contracts and data mesh and things like that. So
we actually had Jamak on 20 years ago. Yeah. And then since then it was a huge thing. Yeah. And then everybody, there was like, data mesh and data fabric just because of the Gartner stuff here. Mm. And now it's kind of, don't talk that much about products now all the time.
Data products up and down, right? Thing I'll note, and then I'm curious what you would say is I think been an appreciation in data management for people. Empathy, curiosity, managed, right? That I think has true, but at least now is more explicit.
Yeah, people ask because it's always been something that has, I think, started 4 years ago with something that was kind of implicit and was kind of coming up, but then so many times over and over again, it would just become more and more of a big deal. And I don't want to start calling out like guests and stuff because I know we're going to miss out folks, but I will say that there was, we asked, what is your advice? Ergus said, empathy, curiosity, empathetic. And that's always stuck with me. And I think that's what we need more. People has definitely been one of those things that has always been a thread throughout everything we've been talking on the podcast. So that's one of them. And then so what else you have? I got some notes I'm looking into.
Like things that come to mind are knowledge graph. Obviously it's been a big theme throughout a bunch of episodes, right? I just always remember Bob Muglia coming on, former CEO of Snowflake. Mm-hmm. And talking about the importance of, from the relational world and the importance of sort of the modern resurgence of the cloud data warehouse, right? The fact that knowledge graphs are going to be the future. Governance is actually the first application on knowledge graphs. I'll always remember that.
Yeah, and I think I will acknowledge that this is something that we have, I'm biased. This has been my entire career. But I've been wanting to, honest, no BS, we have this platform because I genuinely believe it's the right thing to go do. But I think also cataloging cocktails for a reason, right? And I think that has consistently been there and gotten stronger and stronger, not just the data catalog as a technology, as a platform, but it's all the metadata, the semantics, and now with Gen AI, all this context, and now definitely Knowledge Graph is all over the place. And we'll talk later about what's going on. Metadata consistently has been something, another one of those gotten stronger. And then quick parentheses, we just jumped into this stuff and man, cheers. We got some cocktails.
Cheers. Wait, so what are we doing? Everything out of order today. It's been a long week. What are you drinking?
I'm just having a gin and tonic. We're in London.
That's traditional London style. Yeah. So I decided to go with more of a less of a London tradition and more of a catalog and cocktails tradition, which is an old fashioned, which is, I always say, like, try not to repeat cocktails.
Oh, but that's the one.
But if we will, if we do, it's going to be an old fashioned.
Anyways, so. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Cheers to 4 years of doing this. Oh, all right. So we said rise and death of the modern data stack.
Yep.
Rise, I think it's death, but whatever. Okay. Yeah. Mesh, fabric, whatever, foes and friends, are they now?
Mm-hmm.
Part of that has been the data product. Treat data as a product, right? Data product managers. And that has been another of the big themes.
Mm-hmm. And those things have really stuck in terms of data mesh.
Talked about now knowledge graph, semantic layers. I think that
metric layers.
But that was interesting because I think that was like a little blip in time.
And so metric layers, weird time at Gartner DNA. Yeah. I don't know why, if people are reminiscing but it seems like people are kind of dots between, remember when metrics layer was coming up, and now kind of now focus on semantics.
Especially because when people want to go have these chat with your data type of systems, these question answering systems, they're going to be asking questions about metrics. So the question is, where are these metrics going to be stored?
Yeah. How?
All right. Social side of we talked about this, the people, teams, culture, literacy, storytelling. I think storytelling is something that we actually had a couple episodes of storytelling, but this is something I believe that it's going to start seeing more now.
Yeah.
Now, governance, tie that together with like data stuff, but governance has always been another theme throughout the entire podcast. And I think the big one that wasn't in the first 2 years, I would say, but has been more in the last 2 years is business value.
Oh, yeah. So, data people, right? We have to be thinking about the impact that we're having on the business and become less obsessed about data literacy, right? The business people getting data literacy, and get a little more obsessed about data people having business literacy.
Exactly. And then we need, the other topic is the Gen AI, the large language model. Like, that has been one of the big topics right now. So that's a fair summary. I mean, I'm like,
One other thing I'll note is I think as the modern data stack kind of fallen, I'll say, of traditional best practices around data warehousing, right? Like Kimball and general sort of dimensional modeling around your data, right? Secondly is like good old it is at this point, but like engineering, just like connect my systems together. I got to make the right things happen.
Yeah. I think that and now with the whole AI and large language models, we're seeing the need for semantics. Like, this is something that is now strong on people's mind.
Yep.
Is we need to go invest in the semantics and the modeling, and that we want to be able to provide great, beautiful data so we can give that context to LLMs, like where it's going to come from. So,
for those of you that are listening, what have been what some of your favorite episodes are, some of your favorite moments? And I'm curious, where do you think this is all going as we go forward? What's the next 4 years of catalog and cocktails going to be all about?
So yeah, if you think, because the honest no BS is that we don't even know what we're going to do next, right? Let's go.
We didn't know we were going to do this for 4 years. Who knows if we're doing this for another 4 years?
I don't know. So just reach out to us. Let us
talking about that what, we should talk more about. So what are we not talking about?
What should we start doing that we're not doing? What should we stop doing that we're doing? What should we continue doing? What should we kind of things a little bit? So yeah, just let us know. But talk on Friday, we'll be talking more about.
One last thing before we come on. We've got some different shirts going on. And I know that our listeners, we've got new wave sales, and actually we have an even newer logo that maybe will show up on a shirt at some point. Here we, unfortunately, for those who are watching the video, the owl blends in a little too much. The original first shirts we made, new and soon to be old
and
again.
For folks who will reach out, who are coming over on Monday, on Friday to our house.
Yes.
All right.
We got t-shirts, and for those that are listening, if you're a fan, you love, ping us. We'll find a way to get you a shirt.
Yeah.
It won't have special.
That's for our next business.
Yeah, we'll start that business someday.
All right. Well, Blakey, we're going to highlight.
Partner, this has been a fun 3 days. A little bit biased. There's a little honest, no BS here, and that, World's Catalog Company. Big theme throughout the entire conference has been around metadata and the importance of metadata to a lot of things, of course, but especially AI. It is the context for Gen AI as we go forward.
I think what has been very clear right now is that generative AI is actually reigniting the topic of metadata, and it's like this forcing function, right? I think we acknowledge that we live in like chaotic world and we need to start kind of organizing it for AI. And the way to go manage that complexity is through managing it, through managing that metadata. So I think that is, metadata was like that second class citizen governance. And now to fill with AI, or to have, we need to be able to have the, we need to start cleaning up the data. That's why quality is going to be so important. And be able to have all the lineage and observability. And so to talk about trust and explainability. And then right now, I think anybody who's thinking about AI, all these topics of metadata and governance and will come in necessary. And people are going to try to figure out how to take this right now. You're not focusing on metadata, your competitor. So,
yeah. So, and it was very late in the cut. I'll fast forward because we're talking about metadata. Robert Thoner gave a talk on sort of the space and where it's going. He had a few different themes about convergence. You know, during the modern data stack, saw everything kind of part. Now we see kind of the convergence where you got the more unified data platforms coming together and things congealing around certain spots. Talked about Gen AI, obviously, as being a really key thing. But then the third thing, or in the middle, was actually originally metadata was thought of as exhaust, right? But now going forward, we're going to think of metadata as a first-class citizen. You're going to be thinking, it is it in a standard format, and I put it in my knowledge graph, feed it to my Gen AI, right? So this is going to become a first class concept in everything you do with every tool. Can I get my ETL metadata? Can I get my data warehouse metadata? Can I get my BI metadata? Can I get my semantic layer metadata? Right.
And I think what's really important about the metadata aspect is that it helps you understand where you should put your focus on. So that's how you know what people are using, like how complex are things. And then again, tying it back to the business value, it's going to say, well, I got all this data. Here's what I'm trying to go do from my business perspective. Making that connection is going to happen through metadata to understand. I think like we're talking about, I think in that same talk, there's about like you want to do decision intelligence. And this is actually came up in the keynotes too, is you need to understand how this business is working. And I want to understand how do we do operational excellence? How do we understand better our customers? Yeah. All of this is to be able to go connect all your data. And this brings up to the another big topic, which I mean, I am super thrilled that knowledge a key topic. And I wrote this on LinkedIn, kind of blew up a bit. Mark Beyer, one of the very distinguished analysts here at Gartner, he gave this talk on the top 10 trends of data engineering and integration. Trends was SM graphs is key. And what is that they actually call out like the state standard.
Yeah, they had a bullet that said
W3C standard. So he does acknowledge that it is a state of mind, right? Mm-hmm. So again, this is like it's the Wittgenstein quote. Think about how once you start thinking about that, it's how you're going to start integrating your data, your metadata, your people, your one of those trends for data engineering as knowledge graphs. Knowledge graphs are going to be part of your generative AI, your AI. This is the big trend. So I'm really, really excited and I'm so thrilled that this is like what I've been doing for decades.
This is the inflection point of knowledge graphs, which is exciting, and it's becoming a central
point. That's one thing very clear that it's that bringing all that is coming from the knowledge graphs. That was another big thing. So metadata, knowledge graphs, I'll put that together.
So,
what else?
So this might be a segue. So at some point, I want to come back to the opening keynote. I know we're kind of out of order here, but I think there's an interesting segue here because we talked about metadata, we talked about knowledge graph, we talked about Gen AI. There was a weird in the area of Gen AI at this conference, which I think that if we want to be critical, right, honest, no BS, it felt so. You and I, we know a little bit more about the Gen AI space. I know there's probably a lot of attendees at Gartner that are a little newer, still trying to wrap their head around it, right? Some of the content Gartner focused around the importance of governance and a strong data foundation to create AI-ready data to then service Gen AI. But there's a bit of a most of the applications at App State are really focused on unstructured textual data, either fed in through prompts or being fed in, you know, as in a being used as augmented general texture with AI agent, right? Data is treated very differently than the traditional governance and data quality and everything. So, like, we're talking all about these data. Gen AI applications are using unstructured data, like this will eventually,
but
right?
And this is not just an issue here at this conference. yeah. so many different places.
It's creating honesty.
And I think there's just the assumptions, right? Yeah. Narrative AI. Well, first of all, you're using the word AI, generative AI, kind of interchangeably when they're. So then we're like, oh, yes, either you use the word AI, you have AI ready data. But look, when it's generative AI, it's usually text. So what is data quality over text unstructured data? Yeah. What is data governance over unstructured data mean? You know what? Nobody knows. I mean, actually, people who probably know are people who've been working on these content management. It's not like the professionals actually go work for it.
Steeped in the structured data world. There are things out there, document management systems, CMS, there's things like open text and other things out there. There's a whole space around unstructured data that, like, kind of think about that is actually probably closely related than the structured data stuff at the moment.
So this is the big disconnect, right? And actually, it's super frustrating when people are giving talks here and even hallway conversations of like, oh yeah, we need to use the principles of management for data to go fine tune your LLM. It's like you fine tune your LLM with like structure stuff. You're not going to use your traditional data. So that is a confusing thing. So that's something that I think everybody needs to wake up and, okay, what are you talking about? Unstructured data, structured data, like, this is tool looking, like, really be very critical on this. Like, this is annoying.
And the AI comment that you made, the percent, realistically, because it can apply to machine learning or more traditional AI threads. Yes. But Gen AI, specifically, there's
not just from the Gartner, but from a one.
Yeah. Bigger than just Gartner. It's the whole wrap their head around this. Yeah.
I think talking about like AI ready data, what's interesting here is that
that was a theme.
The AI ready was all over the place, but it's actually, they said it's AI ready. AI ready data means it's actually data for a particular use case.
Yes.
And but they left it as that.
Yeah.
It's literally, I'm unpacking a little bit more, but no. I think people are still trying to figure out what it is, especially because I think there's this confusion of unstructured and structured. What is AI ready? What does AI ready mean for your unstructured stuff? So I think that's one of it's for your use case, but we need more details.
I was actually happy with that as a kind of recommendation, a little bit more details, but I do think we might be grappling with like am I AI ready or am I not? I think ready. This is in the context of that.
That's true. So you should think about my it is. Think about what things are going to change for the use cases. Mm-hmm. Again, they're going to be unstructured, which is going to be different from the structured and so forth.
Yep.
So there, the same. There's a talk on data mesh and data fabric type of stuff. But mm-hmm. we kind of everything at the end of the day, the data mesh and all the work that credit goes to Shamak. Well. So be a podcast. I won't forget. Data products really changed the data world.
Yeah. So just to remind our listeners here, like mesh has kind of main tenets, right? There's domain driven architecture, right? Or domain driven ownership, right? There's a self service platform. There's data products or data as a product, right? And then federated computational governance, right? So those are the four main tenets
Out of that, I think now we're talking a lot more about governance. So I think that's one thing.
Governance,
The data products, right? Your data product. And actually, very specifically, I have here the definition they put out. Three things.
Findable, so this is the Gartner definition.
Yeah. Consumption ready. Second, it's kept up to date. And third, governance for appropriate usage.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I think that's very, very spot on.
That's actually a pretty clean definition.
Yeah. And then what was interesting, and they showed this up in one of the keynotes, was that they did actually like a word cloud from all Gartner customers on what they were using the data products for. Mm-hmm. And they're business oriented and business value impacts. And the words were benchmarking, price negotiation, soft market cycle, customer experience, portfolio insights. So it's really great to go see that people are being able to go tie business value impact to their products.
These are business impacting use cases.
Yeah. So I think that the data products, I think data products are, you can go get devils in the details now, the notion of a particular use case.
And closely related to data products, in a few different sessions, I heard mention of data sort of role. In our company, we talked about roles a lot and both positivity and skepticism about new roles. But one thing about, and Gartner obviously is pushing this as well, is data product manager, somebody who's really going to take product management principles and ownership and accountability and cross business and drive a roadmap around these usable products. And it's not just about data. It can be data products. They can be AI products. They can be analytic products. But it's these products, more and more product managers, whether officially they have the or not. It's a practice we're going to see really take off.
And to the product, like here, I got my notes, business value, about these four kind of a principles in a way that CDOs are going to be doing. Mm-hmm. So change culture, mm-hmm. create strategy, manage the function, and then, and what was really interesting, a lot of the focus today is around change culture and create strategy, mm-hmm. but those are things that are moving the needle. And to move the needle, you really need to just better manage the function, right? Mm-hmm. And then governance. And what's really interesting is that on the governance side, it's how we're going to be able to empower and enable people to use the data for the stuff that's going to move the needle. Mm-hmm. So is again, the focus always happened over and over again, and also talked about. Fit definitely is going to be all over the place, especially now with like more money on leaders. Like, you can't be centralized. You need to go franchise this out. So I think that's a very interesting point.
I've heard we've done a few networking events and stuff after the conference days, and I've heard quite a few people really resonate with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that a little bit, honestly, a little surprising that some people get so excited about it. But I guess it's distinctive because you got sort of this hub and spoke model being so central, got your sort of decentralized aspects, but the spokes can't really exist without the hub, right? So that's kind of one model. You franchise model, which Gartner, and I've heard multiple independent people that Russia, the Japanese McDonald's is going to be a little bit different, McDonald's, right? But there's some things that are the same. And so you references and you incorporate, which is cool.
And I think what we'll, the CDO now is you have to understand the business. I think the whole, we only need years or 18 months or whatever. It's like, it's because you don't understand technical. Like, is probably over now, I would think. And the thing they said is, how does your organization and values operational efficiency, or if the value is for intimacy, then you have to talk that language. If your focus is on like being obsessed about customers, don't talk about
each company has us as a DNA.
Yeah. What else? What else do you? What else are here? I got more things.
No, the theme of intelligence. And I thought that was a little bit wordy and high level. I think about that choice of word and the way that they bought it, right? Like the imagery of animals. And one of those images that kept on showing up was of a bee, right? And I think we're all trying to grapple with, you know, Gen AI and kind of advances in AI, right? The knowledge that lives in our head and our heads and people are doing and collective intelligence, right? They gave some examples. They talked about, for example, where, a company, a pharmaceutical trying to develop new drugs, right? It would take 10 years. This comes to deploy drugs in a few months. They gave another example where they talked about job posting, a job kind of posting automation company, right? And where, you know, normally it would take, you know, 90 minutes to write a job advertisement, and they were able to get it down to 5 minutes. But what was interesting when they talked about, you know, all these examples, it wasn't just pure Gen AI, like, oh, the Gen AI did it, right? It was the collaboration between humans and machines working together, knowledge out of people's heads, the things that only humans can do, and then the things that AI can only do, and how those things work in sort of a symbiosis together. And so, you know, despite this word feeling a little icky and a little buzzwordy, right, collective intelligence, I'm excited about that as a theme to say, how do we use the combination of human and robots to do the best thing?
An emphasis on solving problems and creating value collaboratively.
Yeah.
I think, and it goes back to one of the themes that we've always had, is it's the people aspect. And right now, it's not just automating things and making sure the machines do things, involve this stuff.
And kind of working more effectively and everything.
We had Peter Hinton had the talk on his concept of the never normal.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal talk. Mm-hmm. You got to look Peter up, Peter Hinson. The never normal is something, I mean, we don't live in this new normal. It's in this never normal. Like, we are in a completely changing world all the time. And where something tiny is like another change. And it goes back to, like, I bring up the example, like you have, you're in the Swiss canal, and then sideways a little bit, and then the economy of the world can go kaput for a while because of that, right? It's really changing. One of the examples I saw is how they were comparing how communications are changing kind of from different generations.
Mm.
And there's like this whole area, this whole group of people, you have email, mm-hmm. but young folks today, they don't have emails, or they don't communicate on emails. But if they have an email, the term, what he said is vintage websites that need an email to access. That is why I have emails, because there are this concept of vintage websites. So like, these are the stuff that is now changing constantly. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what's going to happen next. We live in this world of unknown knowns, so we need to have this fluidity. So I think a bunch of great quotes that got me reminded, right? The danger in times of blitz is acting with yesterday's logic. That's a famous Peter Drucker. Mm-hmm.
That's a Peter Drucker quote
around that. Other way, he had great quotes. I'm going to just name a couple ones here.
Yeah.
There is more fiction great. And actually, like, you know, when is the moment where most fake news comes? During budget season, because we come up with all these numbers and we end up writing that fake news. So I wonder what our folks is thinking.
It's a bit of a business burn.
Another one is that we suffer this, what we call phenomena. We're to need a bigger boat, because we actually said, oh, just like more compute, more this and that. I think that's something that's going to be changing around.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Anyway, so that was a great keynote over there to talk to.
I love that.
And at the end, one of the things I took away, the combination of man and machine, humans that is easy for machines, mm-hmm. and what is easy for humans that can be hard for machines. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the work that you're doing. Try to employ that, like, this is how we find that balance right there.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Any closing? I got a couple more.
I'm thinking about AI stuff. Thinking about the keynote around sort of psychology.
Oh, so before we go through again, how to notice change, but the talk that I went to about behavioral science when it comes to stewardship, for stewardship, and I think these two things combine. Like, you want to be able to, in the Kishiro said, establish a common ground. Mm-hmm. So instead of I'm right and you're wrong and here's the data supporting that I'm right, like, let's focus on what we agree on, mm-hmm. not on what we disagree. If we think about psychology, is how we should be able to start thinking about, we want to make these changes in governance, which how is this governance and meta main, it's, we know it's important right now, but it's not cool. How do we make it cool? I think that's one of the things that behavioral science and how to change human behavior around things.
I read the talk from Tally, and I think that what's cool is she tied in all of these psychology research aspects in terms of giving you an idea how to actually affect change in a way that's going to be lasting and ignite that are in place. And so for one example, I thought, at least it for me, was she talked about, and they were trying to get them to with very high compliance, right? When they first kind of started off, the compliance was at, you know, around 30% for this particular kind of, did they wash it right after kind of when they needed to wash it, right? And what they found was if they just did, like, you must do it, this mandate, they wouldn't change. But if they rewarded them, Bob, you washed your hands, and they put a little sign right at the sink, great, the edge right there, and there's an immediate god of like, yes, I'm doing a good job, and the social proof of watching the number go as the entire team was working together. So to our own businesses, right? Like things like your boss is like, good job, that's so corny, right? But then, like, you think, like, actually, these are like positive psychology things that help us to do some of the things that maybe feel like eating our vegetables, right? Like, so some of the things that we don't necessarily want to do.
Exactly the point. I think I bring this up again, like, metadata to do all this stuff. Like, it's like eating your vegetables. It's like, okay, how do we make eating our vegetables fun? And I think these are examples from psychology and you. So specifically, it's like highlight opportunities for progress rather than for knowledge, sugarcoating it. You want to highlight what needs to be done to be able to get to that outcome. Identify these immediate. Mm-hmm. So there's small things that can be done, or also these nudges, right? And what was interesting about on behavioral science, like, nudges are kind of out there in front of you instead of like you have to go proof, right? If you want to highlight the positive reactions of others.
Yeah.
So 10 people actually, like,
the example for the I think it was the taxes, right? And she was trying to submit their taxes on time. And even though they would say, hey, if you don't turn your taxes in on time, you know, blah, 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 it's going to be a problem. People, it wasn't changing. Then they add one line on the notice that said 9 out of 10 people in Britain are submitting their taxes on time. You say, oh, well, I don't want to be the 1 out of 10.
That changed. Like, that was like immediately you could see the change around that stuff by adding that one extra sentence.
Yep. And it added, you know, another $5 billion or whatever in revenue to the country. Yeah.
So a couple other things we said, expand the sense of control, especially during times of change. Mm-hmm. So instead of telling folks what to do, give them a choice. And when make that choice, they rationalize what they chose and they're confident about that. And I think this is one of the things that this is how we can combine man and machine, right? Mm-hmm. And technology is like, hey, we need to go do this. And like, well, okay, does that mean that I should go and do everything? But mm-hmm. no, I think there's a balance and we can say, hey, the machine did all the stuff. Now to the person, you say, hey, here's a choice. Tell us which is the best one. So now they have to make a choice and we can now kind of do that combination of what needs to be stewardship with what needs to be automated. Yeah. And then another one is like consider emotional state. So when are people the happiest? For example, mm-hmm. they're asking the question, if you want to go, you're going on vacation, when are you happy? So for their vacation or during the happiest is the going to vacation because you have that anticipation, that immediate word is that anticipation for something that's fun. And actually there's like, she asked people in the crowd, what is your favorite day of the week? Monday. Well, nobody. Tuesday. Things Wednesday, Friday. Where most people raise their hand.
Yeah. Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. Saturday, Sunday wasn't even though Sunday that you're off.
Yeah.
And you should be enjoying yourself, but you just have anticipation of the week. So Friday, which is actually a work day, the day before your days off, is when you have most happiest.
Yeah. You're when you actually get to Saturday, it wasn't as great as you expected. You're like, oh, bummer, right? Friday was the day you were excited. Yeah, it's Friday. Another funny example that she gave that was related to this, she called it a bonus item, was creating anticipatory events. And she talked about research where they said to the people participating in the study, hey, imagine your favorite celebrity, right? Now imagine that they're going to give you a kiss. Favorite celebrity is going to kiss you. So hopefully you picked a good celebrity. So if I picked like Tom Hanks or something, I don't know if I want a kiss from Tom Hanks. So I didn't pick well. And they said, and you would expect people like, oh, well, I want it like now. Like I want it 5 minutes from now, right? But no, the peak was actually 3. People wanted to relish in the fact that they were going to get a kiss. It's the anticipation of the kiss that is actually more powerful than the kiss itself.
Yep.
So anticipation, create anticipatory events.
So about AI, we talked a lot about being AI ready data, and then there's data products. We talked about business value. We talked about the psychology, is behavioral science, mm-hmm. and obviously metadata and knowledge graphs. I think those things where it still stands out.
I'm trying to look through and see if there's anything else. I'm not sure there is. I mean, one last thing I'll note is, you know, on the topic of AI ready data, I do think interesting to think about how AI ready might mean something different depending on different AI techniques, right? If you're doing machine, if you're doing generative AI, if you're doing more like traditional style analysis, like being AI ready is going to mean something different. So I thought that was a good insight.
One more is that came up a lot was unexplainability and trust. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is that we live in this chaotic world. And we need to go deal with it to be able to go deal with to have all this data for AI and stuff. But one of the things that we've come from this wanting to have this single version of the truth type of stuff. But now we actually, even though we've tried and worked so much in having a single version of the truth, mm-hmm. we've got to the point that we don't trust it. We don't trust anything. Because there's like so much misinformation and stuff. Yep. So this is one of the big issues that we're seeing. And I think the issue is not that we don't trust the data, it's that we don't even trust ourselves.
Yep.
That was an interesting point. And I know we always talk about garbage in and garbage out. So the problem is out. That whatever goes in, we always expect that to be the right thing. So this is why I think there is a big, I think this is something we all need to work on and figure out how do we trust? How do we generate trust? And trust, that means that we need to really be able to go talk to the end users and ties us back to what are the use cases, right? Mm-hmm. So what are the expectations? What are the users? What are they expecting? We need to go have these. What do you expect trust about how we explain things, which we need a lot of more story, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Explain the explanations of what's happening. We need to have that and be very transparent about expectations of mm-hmm. things. And again, and all this metadata, those explanations, mm-hmm. but we need to have that storytelling to be able to share mm-hmm. that what that trust is, make sure that we're meeting with the expectations.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was a stat that 22% storytelling. So which means that kind of means that, you know, a lot of companies are starting to value the importance of data storytelling, but it should probably be way higher than They're really trying to make a difference. This is just one last thing I can think of in terms of the answer. I think it kind of sums up a lot of what we were talking about today. That is the importance of the business value around data management, around data analysis, and some research at Gartner that basically showed that organizations that embrace maturity, really, they 30% financial performance. And I think some data leaders, we get wrapped up in the technology, or we get wrapped up ourselves, you know, implicitly or explicitly, cost center. We have to remember, fucking help, right? If you're not, if we have money, and we have to think like that, we got to think in terms of ROI.
And it's not just ROI, it's about the business outcomes. And I think that's what's super important. High business outcomes and understandization value, make sure you very quickly, what didn't show up, come up in the
things that affected
where your agents, but not here. And I'll argue, I mean, Gartner, the honest no BS is that Gartner usually kind of covers things that's happened. So this is what's starting to happen now. So I'm surprised if next year, or at least in Orlando next year, we're hearing more about agents. I think that's one.
Yeah, yeah. Because that is a bit of a miss, because agent-based architecture is all the talk of Gen AI and LLMs. There was very weird. Another thing we missed was that we hit it a little bit. We're talking about positions. There wasn't a lot of talk about unstructured data at all. Like, most of the conversation was talking around structured data. I mean, text data, vector databases, unstructured data. It came up a little bit, but like kind of more like it would show up and it would be like a thing in the corner of the slide. It wasn't a major topic. And I think that in the context of Gen AI and around data management, like how should data leaders be thinking about unstructured data? Like, I don't think that anybody came away with an answer to that question.
That is true. Years starting from modern data is alive and dead, data mesh, data fabric. 4 years, metadata, knowledge graphs continues to be a thing, right? Governance continues to be a thing.
Where are we going to be 4 years from now?
Oh, I have no idea. Oh, okay. I'm going to be heading towards this world that will have our true assistants, that will know what they know, but they will know what they don't know, be very explicit about it, and then they'll help us kind of learn more about what's missing. That is structured, all the combinations and stuff, and it's like, and all these, that's where we're going, and that's where I'm going to be working on, and making that reality, that vision a reality.
That's interesting.
Where are we going to be in 4 years?
I'm going to pick one thing specific, and that is, and it's going to, I'm going to leave it a little bit of an unknown, so it's a little bit of a cop out. But I've been talking to Juan a little bit about this lately, and I've been talking to a few others about this. I call it text wars is a reason. The power is shifting to whatever tool or platform owns the context of business. And I'm not talking about the data. I'm talking about the knowledge.
The metadata.
The metadata and the ontology that holds the metadata together, along with that field, but needs to live in a system, right? The context, that context layer, that context engine. That's where the power is going to be. But the open-ended question that I just don't know the answer to is live in your BI tool, live in your unified data platform integration tool. Is it going to live in your transformation tool, your DBT, right? Live in your catalog or your knowledge graph or your knowledge graph-based catalog, right? And that's going to be the place where the context lives, and that is the semantic layer. I don't know.
Well, I know. I think it needs to be in the knowledge graph. That's my position, and I'm not saying this because of, from a salesy perspective, my evidence is I've dedicated my entire career to this shit, is that this is an independent layer outside of your data, outside of it needs to be able to connect stuff. I think it needs to be governed, it needs to be independent, it needs to be based on open standards, because this is the critical knowledge about your business, the context. Think about it this way. It's like you should be able to go describe your business and stick it in. This is actually a kind of analogy I bring from you should be able to put how business works to a thumb drive and stick it. And 100 years from now, somebody should be able to find that, and assuming they can get the thumb drive, right? Be able to get that. And because it's machine readable and because it's open standards, they should be able to go in and like, oh, this is how this business worked. Mm-hmm. This is how this organization worked. So that's when you need to go to. And so, yeah, I think that should be independent. And I like this context war things. I can see.
I think there's going to
things around.
I think we're already starting to enter this context war period. This context war period is going to maybe last the good part of this 4 years. And if we make the right choices, then I think, you know, when we answer the question, hey, what is the heart of your data stack? Right. Right now, I think today would people probably be like, oh, my data warehouse is probably the heart of my data stack. Right. I hope that 4 years from now, people will say my knowledge graph is the heart of my data stack.
Leave it like that.
Yeah, I'll see if we get there. Yeah. And I hope we will.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. To another 4 years.
To the next 4 years.
Well, I don't know if we're going to do a podcast for another 4 years, but yeah. but we'll still be hanging
out. The honest no BS will continue in one shape, form or another. Cheers to data.world that lets us drink cocktails and wax philosophical about data and go to awesome conferences and meet amazing people like you. And thank you to all of you for being amazing listeners.
And
we
love you. Shout out to all the listeners that we met this week here at Gartner.
Yeah.
You're the reason why we can do this. Like, there's just so many cool people that we get to meet. Thank you so much for everybody.
Appreciate the love and cheers to you all. And
see you Friday at 4 p.m.
See you Friday. Cheers.
Bye.